Glad to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we welcome the Viceroy of Vegetation, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. He works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, good to see you.
And the Vicar of Vegetables, one of them.
Yes.
Jim Nienhuis, who is a professor of horticulture and gardening haiku poet.
Yes, well, I want to encourage our listeners to call in with their vegetable haikus. And I want to challenge Mike here, now that you're with the Vicars and Viceroys, et cetera.
Okay.
Come on, think of this, a spontaneous Viceroy haiku about vegetables. Not just a haiku, but a spontaneous haiku.
There once was a cucumber for
me. No, Mike. Oh, my God. All right, we can see we're going in the wrong direction here.
Well, let's go to David Livingston, see what's on his mind. Hi, Dave.
How's it going, guys?
Thanks for calling.
I have a question on my tomatillos, a more efficient way of growing them. Last year, they actually kind of took over my garden. They kind of stormed over just about everything, nearly wiped out half my habaneros and Thai dragons. But I was wondering, would it be a little bit more efficient if I took something like landscaping lattice, set it up diagonally on a framing, and had them essentially crawl through that to produce a little bit better?
You sound like you're really good with a chainsaw, which might be an appropriate garden utensil to be used, right, with the tomatillo. On the other hand, think of the blessing of abundance that you have been given, a garden that never ends. And what does it give you? The tomatillo. Think of that. I mean, is there anything really better than, you know, salsa verde?
Well,
I can't think of anything.
Okay. What is your favorite salsa verde recipe?
Most of mine involve a lot of habaneros, Thai dragon.
Okay, cool.
We've called before. I was the guy that has the smoked salsa.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I was going to give some to Phil Palateri to give to you, but I haven't exactly had time lately.
Please! I definitely want to get your smoked salsa, and you know, of course, that I am really into the habaneros. Although the only other pepper that I want to suggest to you is the ají, the bacatum peppers as well. We did a little experiment last year, and just tell you about this briefly. In which we had some students, they tested 100 different types of bacatums. Mike, maybe you know those. I have a really difficult time growing those, the ají peppers here in Wisconsin. They tend to be quite late. So what we did was we grew 100 accessions, right, from the germplasm bank, from the USDA germplasm bank, and we identified two that flowered and fruited fairly early in Wisconsin. So I have a lot of those bacatums out. I'd have to say that if you want, I mean, the only thing that I could think that could possibly improve a salsa verde would be to put some ají pepper in there. What do you think?
That sounds really good. Actually, I was going to ask you, too, about Caribbean reds. This is my third year of me trying to get them to actually go to full, basically change to a full red. I can't really get them to fully mature here, and I've taken every step as far as I use the black medium. Mulch, try to keep the ground a little bit warmer. I go through all those steps, but it still seems like I can't quite get them to turn the corner.
Mike, you know, I'm looking at Mike, and he's got an answer just on the tip of his tongue. Mine, of course, is vegetable prayer.
That's kind of on the lines of what I was thinking. I'm saying, if you're putting down that black fabric to really heat it up and give it the environment it needs to grow, and it's just not turning the corner, maybe we just aren't in a long enough season for you here.
And you know, of course, the giveaway there is Caribbean red. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was called North Dakota red, or Alaska red,
then you'd know.
Then there might be some expectations of some earlier season maturity.
Yeah, maybe you get your hands on that germplasm and come out the badger hand, red.
Or on the other hand, you know, on your next trip to Aruba, I would say plant there.
Okay. Good luck, Dave. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in Toma, I think, is next. Mary, hi.
Hello. Good morning. I was just wondering, is it too late to start a red bell peppers from seed if I'm going to plant them in movable planters?
A movable pepper?
In September, if they're still producing, I can move them inside.
Oh, wow. I see what you're doing.
Would you think I'd be able to do that yet?
I can see that Mike and I are going to disagree on this one already.
Well, my thought is you can do whatever you want. The question is, are you going to have success?
Because I'm having a hard time finding them. The plants, they're all out in our area. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got some. How far away are you?
I'm in Tacoma, but I work near Windsor.
Tacoma, so Windsor. Is that in Wisconsin?
Yes. That's north of some
okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, any friends
I
or family?
Dung
any
is
friends
out.
Or families coming down to Madison? I've got seedlings right now.
Oh, great, yeah. Great. I'll just
stop by.
Email you, or where, what would be easiest?
Do you have somebody who can stop by and pick some up?
Yes.
Oh, great. I'll just email me or call me.
Okay.
And email is easy. Ninhus. It's a little hard to spell, you know.
Don't worry about
okay,
all that. I can get it online after
yeah.
you do it.
Just
so.
Look for, just Google good-looking guy. I like flash up their number one. Mike on number two, actually.
The other question I had was about what they're calling a chocolate pepper. Have you ever grown one of those?
Okay. These are, now in peppers, colors are, you basically are able to turn yourself into Claude Monet with peppers, right?
Yeah.
And now, but think of this, right? The only thing that differentiates, the pigments are the same in tomatoes and peppers, right? You've got chlorophyll and you've got the carotenoids. What happens in tomatoes is that chlorophyll degrades and then the carotenoids are synthesized, right? So you get a phase where they go from green down to white, and then you can go into... Then you go into red. Mm-hmm. In peppers, interestingly enough, those phases overlap. So you may not get a degradation of the chlorophyll. And, of course, if you don't have a degradation of chlorophyll and you get a simultaneous synthesis of the carotenoids, you like Claude Monet. You get a little dab of, you know, a little dab of red, a little dab of green. What are you going to get?
Brown.
And that's exactly what the brown pepper is. It's simply in which chlorophyll has not been degraded. Is that right, Mike?
That sounds good to me.
Okay.
So will they will taste similar to a green pepper?
You know, they're going to taste, you know, the carotenoids are not going to affect the flavor. What's going to happen is that later, as the peppers mature, you're going to get a greater synthesis, not only of the carotenoids, but also the sugars.
Okay.
So that they will tend to get sweeter. Now, the brown peppers, I will say, are used mostly for making exquisite dishes like mole.
Oh,
mole,
okay.
One of my favorites. But, you know, what they're used for is they're used for grinding, right? There's the incredible pepper called the, I'm thinking of this, what is it, Mike? The pasilla? The pasilla, which is called the raisin, right, in Spanish. And that is the pepper that's used to make mole. So brown peppers in Mexican, Aztec tradition, those are the ones used to make sauces, the brown sauces. Oh, man, you ever make a chicken with mole?
No.
You got to try it, Mary.
Got to do this.
Thanks, Mary.
I appreciate the information.
Thanks for calling. You can join in, too, as we talk the gardening today, the vegetables and the flowers and the shrubs with our two guests, Mike Maddox and Jim Nienhuis. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison at 263-1890. Bill in La Crosse, your turn. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to talk to you. And I have a stone wall on one side of my property, and I'm trying to figure out what kind of a vine or plant I could put there beside that wall that would grow and cling to it without my putting up a lattice arrangement.
Jim, you want to suggest a pepper?
No.
I was moving towards a squash, but I know that you're a shrub guy. So
I would say you're not wanting to put up a trellis, so you're going to look for something that has some little clinging pads and not so much tendrils. Some of the basic plants to look for, and they can be a bit aggressive. Parthenocissus, we're looking at Virginia creepers or the Boston ivies.
Virginia creepers?
Yep.
Okay.
Technically, you could probably go out in the woods and dig some up, but you can also probably get some at your local garden center. We have some variegated ones growing at Rotary Botanical Gardens, which are...
Can you dig those up, by the way?
No.
Oh,
no.
Sorry.
No. And we now have a surveillance system to keep an eye on you if you do show up to do that. But that is a nice, easy, low-maintenance one to put up. Are you in full sun?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, at least more than half the day, yes.
All right, more than 6 hours? Yeah, that's a good one to go with... you know, in my yard, I managed to grow a climbing hydrangea, which is doing great. It does like drainage, I've noticed. And luckily, I have it in a spot that's doing that, and it's growing really nice. And actually has a nice woody ornamental stem, so it's something to look at in the wintertime,
if
too.
If you've got some good drainage, that'd be something to consider.
Otherwise, I've noticed people who put in something heavier clay-like, it just kind of sits there and does nothing.
Yeah, so Virginia creepers or climbing hydrangea.
Yeah, yeah, that's two that come to mind. I'm sure there's others out there, but you know, when we're on the spot like this, that comes to mind.
All right, thanks, Bill. Thanks for calling. Susan in Eau Claire, we turn to you. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Larry. Hi, guys.
Hey.
I, first of all, have a haiku
Let me write it down.
It'll set the stage for my question. Indiscriminate devouring predator.
Indiscriminate devouring predator.
Satan's spawn, the deer.
Satan's spawn. it's lyrical. It's lyric. Truly lyrical.
Indiscriminate. What was it again? Indiscriminate
devouring. Devouring predator.
Are they in the room as we speak?
They're coming through the windows right now.
Are they attacking?
That's my future Madison student. He'll be a freshman in the fall. Yay! So I get to come to Madison.
Good.
Indiscriminate devouring predator, Satan spawned the deer.
Yes, I can relate to that.
Okay. The question I have is
how to control them.
Well, right.
Okay.
But I'm curious about the rhubarb leaf, which I thought was super toxic and poisonous, and yet we have deer that devour our rhubarb leaves and the rhubarb. And I wondered if you knew anything about...
Well, rhubarb leaves are toxic to people, at least. Maybe the digestive system of the deer has... there's a way for them to deal with it.
Yeah,
but it certainly is toxic to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is oxalic acid. Yeah, I suspect. I don't know.
Although, okay.
Don't you think it's appropriate punishment? I mean, if they go back to their little hives at night,
right?
and they're suffering with indigestion, I think there's some justice in that.
I agree. And
do you want to hear my haiku for today? This is my spontaneous haiku. You know, this is one of those romantic haikus. I want you to know that. Summer days lengthen. My beautiful kale will be shortly converted into fragrant biofuel.
I gotta find the Kleenex, that was beautiful.
Thumbs up from Packard. All right.
Okay.
Did we have a question there that we escaped answering?
Was there a question? No, there wasn't.
Well, I was just curious about the rhubarb. And
oh,
so
the rhubarb.
When I see the leaves disappear, maybe I will feel gleeful.
I think it's appropriate.
Yeah.
But it definitely is toxic to us.
Well, if only we could find the ultimate weapon against the tree rat.
The squirrel.
Yeah. Which, you know, my only weapon is actually capsaicin. I use the pepper seeds.
Right.
Yeah. Spraying that out. Yeah.
Well, I've heard that a true gardener, you can tell a true gardener if when watching Bambi, they cheer when Bambi's mother dies.
On that note, we're taking you off the air, Susan. Goodbye.
Although I do, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for Mr. McGregor. You know, really, don't you? Peter Rabbit was out there stealing and violating that garden. I think Mr. McGregor was totally justified.
Mike Maddox and Jim Meehan,
who is this is
our guest today. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Garden Talk here, Larry Mueller with Jim Nienhuis and Mike Maddox, the Vicar of Vegetable and the Viceroy of Vegetation, with us today.
I've been called worse.
And let's go to Bob in Darlington. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I think I've got a pretty good weapon against the tree rat.
Oh, cool. Let's hear it.
It's not superb, but it does a reasonable job because it keeps the tree rats at a limited number.
It's Are we talking about dinner?
It's our wonderful... pet deck cats.
Oh. so they do
a nice job.
Well, the bus on my corner, I'm on a bus stop, it does a number two on them, too.
But my main question is has to do with Creeping Charlie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That my garden has been surrounded by a Creeping Charlie ever since I moved to Darlington here about a decade ago, and I've got a reasonably nice garden. And I've been able to really take good care of it by using the borax solution.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering how to manage the solution without killing grass and other vegetation.
One of the problems with it is that I think the recommendations call for, if you do it properly.
Every other year?
Yeah, you should still probably 2 or 3 applications of that over a 6-year period.
Uh-huh.
And I, Mike, we're not even.
I don't even use that as a recommendation because yeah. there's been no real great research out there to support it either way. And
yeah, I haven't heard much research on it either.
It's something. It's killing the plants by boron toxicity and the difference between the susceptibility of the Creeping Charlie to the boron versus the grass. And you can build it up to like a micronutrient toxicity levels, and that could just kill everything.
Oh,
so I typically don't recommend using that method.
Yeah,
and if it, the major way to battle weeds is always through one good cultural practices. Have healthy grass, healthy flower beds to outcompete it. Then once you have that in place, you know, make sure your nutrient levels are appropriate, et cetera.
Yeah, now that, that's a good idea because now that I've got the Creeping Charlie sort of at a low ebb, I'll try your technique.
Then try always just pulling it. I mean, yeah, you'll relieve the roots. You're going to come back, blah, blah, blah. But you're weakening it.
I'm starting to pull now, so it's not that bad.
And then I think the last line of defense, and what I really try to teach in my classes, is that chemicals always be your last line of defense once you've tried everything culturally with it. You then choose the appropriate product. And in this case, it will be a broadleaf pesticide or herbicide. And to make the applications later in the summer. Right now it's bothering you because it's actively growing, but you'll get the satisfaction of killing the top part. But if you want to really kill it, you want to kill it at the root. And by doing your applications late August, early September, maybe even after a good frost in October, if we have a warm day, make your applications then. It'll be absorbed by the leafy material, translocated down the roots, and you'll kill it at the root. And if not completely, hopefully Mother Nature will push it over the edge the rest of the way during the winter.
The Santa Claus method of weed control?
Ho, ho, ho?
Yeah.
Yep, that's all. That's the what I'm doing in my garden.
Okay.
And I use the machete.
Okay. All right, we're talking vegetables, flowers, shrubs.
Anything.
With our two guests today, give us a call if you want to join in. Kristen in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Kristen.
Good morning. Yes, I worked for a habitat deconstruct project and was able to harvest some plants around the house before they tore it down, peony plants. Mm-hmm. And I took them out really quickly, and I think I sheared off too much of the root. Mm. My question is, are they hard to transplant, or do they just look horrible for the first year and then they'll come back?
I've never really had a problem transplanting peony. The real trick is with it is it does have that really large tuberous root system. When you do move it, you want to move as many of those roots as you can. And if you do break those roots into pieces, you want to maintain 2, 3, 4 eyeballs on there. Those are growing points. I'm assuming it already has some shoots already coming up.
Well, they do.
Yeah, and they just look bad now.
Right. The stems look really healthy, but the leaves look really sad.
I mean, come on. Think about when you have to fly anywhere, when you get off the plane, what you look like. You know, it's just a rough move to make. And nurse it through the year, keep it well watered, and it's going to be probably a lot better come next year.
Okay.
The real trick with the peonies is don't plant them too deep. A lot of people want to put those tubers down too deep, and they're not going to flower. You want to keep them within an inch of the soil.
Oh, I did not do that. So should I bring them back up?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
And I'll think of you next time I fly and I feel haggard.
Oh, please do. Please do.
Thanks a lot for calling. Barbara in Marshfield, hi to you.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I would like to start a few tiny shrubs of pine trees. And I'm wondering, should I use the cones, or should I take some snips from the actual branches? to stake in the ground and try to
germinate.
Yeah, I was going to say cuttings from conifers is a bit difficult to do. If you are going to try to do propagation of your evergreens, it will be best by seed. And then, depending on the plant, you need to get some instructions on what to do with those seeds. I know the forestry section of UW Extension has publications on starting trees from seeds that you find, and that can be accessible by contacting your county extension office. And that'll give you everything you need to know.
Well, are you saying that for me to put a corn in, in water, in ground?
No,
that
no.
Would not germinate?
By planting the whole cone, no. What you'll have to do is have the seeds come out of the cone and probably do some sort of cold treatment. It depends on the plant in order to get those seeds to grow. You may have better luck just scouting through the woods and finding little seedlings and moving them to where you want.
Ah.
That might be the saner way of doing it.
Well, yeah. Then what about, I have some chives there. In my back garden, I'm wondering how do I, will be the best way to use the seeds that come after the blossom.
You're never going to get rid of them. If they're once they're established, they're there forever. This is the blessing of of chives and the tomatillo. It's the gift
forever.
that keeps on giving. Really?
And giving. Yes.
And it is a blessing, right? I mean, who can have dinner without chives?
So I could just dig up a little plant
if
and
you
then
to,
transplant
if,
it.
Right,
and
you
sure.
would just transplant those.
Oh.
And those will transplant any depth, anything.
Yeah.
Don't
you will
worry
not
about
be
it.
Able to get rid of them, yeah. And those are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, if you got a question about vegetables or flowers or shrubs. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, looking for a few more haikus well. We need some haikus. We need some. Bob in Minocqua, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Well, hello there. people are going to be mad at me.
You've got a good haiku?
Our neighbors definitely are, but we used to have an enormous maple tree in our backyard, just back in Minnesota now, which we still have. And nothing would grow under it except Creeping Charlie. And now it's been severely cut back, and so it's a combination of grass and Creeping Charlie. I've never understood why people don't like Creeping Charlie. It's beautiful. It's a lovely ground color or cover. It's green. It has pretty flowers.
This just fits into the definition of a weed. Weed is a plant out of place, and it's all a matter of personal opinion. One man's weed is another man's flower.
You think those lovely little
bluish,
whitish flowers, those are lovely, aren't they?
You know, they blend in great with other things in my yard.
As I say, in Europe, they sell them in the nurseries. But we've gotten to the point where we have violets in our grass, we have dandelions, and as I say, the neighbors
hate
us.
We don't
get rid of any of that stuff. We think it's beautiful.
Dandelion is really a vegetable as well as an ornamental. I mean, I am inspired by your appreciation of Creeping Charlie. I think it's really all about the name, right? Creepy Charlie. I mean, it sounds like a bad date. Right?
I would say probably the solution here is just good neighborly relations, maybe some pie, some drinks.
Roundup.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Oh,
it becomes even more beautiful after a little application of Roundup. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those nice little curly cues.
Oh,
yeah.
When they begin to, when the leaves, curl up.
Or when the 2-4-D drifts over to them and makes them do the little twists and
adds,
curls.
Oh, that so adds to the beauty of Creeping Charlie.
Margaret in Madison, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, my question was probably a little bit off topic, but driving home on the Beltline a few weeks ago, I noticed that it looks like all the evergreens are dying in the arboretum, dying or dead. And I haven't been able to get anybody to, answer why that's happening, what's happening out there.
Well, I would say, first of all, I don't think we really have a topic today. We're all over.
Okay.
I
thought you were talking about vegetables. There's no shrubs. Throw
it at us.
Talking about anything.
And as for what's going on at the Arboretum, if I can't comment on what the actual problem is, though I have been by there to see, it will come down to the management staff there to make the actual problem or decision on what the problem is. I will say, though, in general, when you have evergreens alongside the major roadways, there can be a lot of different things that are impacting their growth. If salt's being used in your area, the salt spray that comes up when you go through the winter, it comes up, it lands on the needles or in the buds that are growing, and that can do dieback that way. There can be any kind of pollution that goes over, depending on the sensitivity of that evergreen to the pollution. Right now in the Beltline in that vicinity, there's a lot of construction going on. It could just be dust. The possibilities are endless. Then you throw in the disease possibilities, the insect possibilities, the fact that we've been kind of a droughty situation for the last forever.
A few years.
and drought on our evergreens is a major problem. Issue. They need to stay well watered, and you know, if they're not well hydrated, other problems are going to come in.
You know, I'll tell you a funny story. We had we'd lost our shirts. Actually, we were dairy farmers and vegetable growers in Illinois and Chicago, and the only thing that saved our farm was we began to grow Christmas trees. Mm-hmm. And one year in the fall, we had this terrific drought, and all of the Christmas trees turned brown. Mm-hmm. Right, but my mother, the master of marketing, rather, she called, what she did was she put an ad in the paper saying golden pine. And the people from Chicago just flocked out there to buy our Christmas trees at our Christmas tree farm.
Golden pine.
The golden pine.
Oh, my goodness. since you're in the Madison area, Margaret, you might just give a call out there. Kevin McSweeney directs the operation out there, and Kevin's probably he's a nice guy and a good talker, and he probably has some answers for you on that specific area.
Okay, well, I'm glad I'm not like the only one that sort of noticed it or whatever. No. I'm like, my gosh,
well, don't you
terrible.
Have a vegetable garden out there this year?
Jim is trolling for vegetable gardening questions.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm afraid I don't grow any vegetables, just chives. And I just got on and heard that somebody was talking about the gift that keeps giving.
Thanks, Margaret.
All right, thank you.
Allison in Sparta, hi to you.
Hi. I'm afraid I don't have a vegetable question for you.
Okay. Oh, it's all right.
I'll just go get some something to drink.
Have you been keeping track on who's answered before?
Why is it? I'm pretty lonely over here. It's okay.
But I do have a very, very basic gardening question.
Okay.
And I apologize that it's so basic, but I'm just getting into planting perennials last couple of years. And now some of my perennials are larger than the ones behind them, and I want to move them. Is there a time of year I should be doing that, or can I do that any time?
Well, the general rule of thumb that you can just apply to transplanting perennials, and of course there's exceptions, always know your plant, but the general rule of thumb is spring blooming perennials, you divide and move in the fall, and late summer or summer and fall blooming perennials, you divide and move in the spring. You
okay.
want to avoid moving things when they're in peak flower, because flowering is a high energy consuming process, and you want mm-hmm. all the energy to go into the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're moving it, while it's in flower, it's just got to compete with the flower bloom and reestablishing itself. And also remember, when you do move stuff, water. Keep it well watered.
So if they're summer flowering, does it make sense to transplant them later in the summer when they're starting to put their energy into the roots?
Yeah, just try to avoid when they're flowering at or transplanting at peak flower.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, you're talking to someone who moves their plants around like furniture. I mean, and I move stuff in peak flower too. So, you know, do as I say, don't do as I do, and just water it.
Okay.
Does UW Extension have some good publications about this general topic, I mean, perennial gardens and that?
Yeah, if you get onto our web, and actually, if you just go onto Google, and if there's any question you guys do have, just type in what that plant is, and I always say throw in the word extension or university to it, and you're going to get not only UW Extension, but all extension services topics related to what you're looking for. And just go for things in the Midwest, Minnesota, Illinois. Wisconsin. Yeah.
Thanks, Allison. Thanks for calling. Peter in Sturgeon Bay is next. Hi, Peter.
I had a question on roses, and if I may ask two, I'll ask one on vegetables.
Good.
Okay, on vegetables, I've put in some raised beds. I'm in the process of doing it. I used womanized, weatherproof 2x12s for the sides, which measure 10.5 inches high. Can I get by with growing annual vegetables in just that, let's say, 10 inches of soil that I would fill those with? Or do I have to get into the ground below it because I'm just about on dead
What do you want, a concrete slab out there? Or,
yeah, just about.
Okay. I think 10 inches is going to work a little, you know.
Sure.
Fine, yeah.
Okay.
Now, root vegetables. I mean, we wouldn't try to grow, you know, those fall or winter, you know, radishes. I wouldn't try to do that.
Okay.
But I would think 10 inches is going to be fine for you.
For tomatoes.
So what are you growing?
For tomatoes, sure.
Sure. Yeah. Tomatoes.
As long as you don't have, you know, the big problem is going to be, is always going to be water management.
Okay.
Right? Isn't that the problem in raised beds? I think you tend to get some drying out. You're going to have to water it probably more than you would normally.
Well, what I had planned to do was put a soaker hose in and, you know, wind it back and forth in several directions.
You got it nailed. What are you growing?
Just tomatoes. And lettuce and maybe green beans if I can get a trellis in there.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. Can I ask the one on roses now?
Sure.
I understand rugosas are very sensitive to sprays. Are they sensitive to fungicides or insecticides or everything?
Rugosa, it sounds like something that's sensitive to everything.
They're very hardy. They're very disease-free. They don't get black spot much. Yeah. But if you get any spray on them, and I don't know exactly which kind, all the leaves turn brown and fall off.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're out of luck on that one.
Okay.
Thanks, Pete.
Anyway.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Steve in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. I had a question on a maple tree. I have about a 10-year-old maple that has raised red dots on all the leaves, and I don't know what it is, but it doesn't look very healthy.
Well, it sounds, if it's raised red dots, it's probably one of the galls on there. Maple trees can get all sorts of little growths on them that are basically nurseries for developing insect larvae. And they can be a little frightening to see, but really there's no real issue there. It's what we call a cosmetic disease or cosmetic disorder. And what it boils down to is, for the most part, it's bothering you more than it's bothering the plant. So I really don't recommend doing anything regarding that because those leaves are going to fall off anyways.
Okay.
That's great news. Thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling.
I've been getting a lot of those type of calls in this year. And when it's pretty much a leaf spot or a leaf growth or something, for the most part, they are nothing to worry about. Again, some exceptions.
Nanette in Monticello, your turn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a flower question.
Okay.
I have had, for about 5 years, sweet peas growing in the back of my garden. They climb up the fence about 5 feet tall, but I never get any blossoms. There may be one or two blossoms.
Not very sweet.
No, they're not.
No.
What's your fertilization practices?
Miracle-Gro every year.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, typically when things don't flower and they're growing 5 feet tall, it may be too much nitrogen.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's not going to allow it to flower.
So cut back on that.
Yeah, do a soil test.
Okay.
Well, that's not going to tell your nitrogen, but that'll help you out. You should always do a soil test when in doubt.
All right.
All right, thank you very much.
Don't be so kind to it. Amy and Mequon, hi to you.
Sweet peas.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of haikus.
Oh, God bless you.
Okay, good. They're not vegetable, though, but here we go.
Okay. Raised things on my leaves. No.
No. And I do have a question, too. So here's one haiku. A grafted plum that forgot its roots, blossoming on a strange branch. And I have another one that's really cute, so let me read that one, and then let me ask my question.
Okay.
Here's the second haiku. A cicada shell, it's saying itself utterly away.
A cicada shell. Oh, that is so...
That's sweet.
Nice.
That is sweet.
Yeah, it is.
Oh.
Okay, so here's my question.
And
it is a fruit tree question, and I know I'm stretching it, but
as long as you have a chainsaw, I have no problem with it.
We do, don't worry. We have a tree, probably a Macintosh apple tree, which I've been working on trimming for the last 5 years so that it would have some fruit. This year it has a lot of fruit, but it turned from a single apple to clusters of maybe five apples on one bud, on one end. And I'm wondering, did this tree revert to some kind of a crab apple?
I wonder if it winter killed. One you planted yourself, what was the rootstock?
Well, it was years ago. We planted about 8 years ago, and I believe it was a Macintosh.
If it was would it have been grafted, though, Mike, on another hardier rootstock?
Apples, you're hitting my weak point on. About the only way I'll deal with apples is an apple pie. But if you have something that is different from the rest of the plant, it could be a reversion. It could be a lot of different things.
The whole thing looks like it reverted last year.
I would say the other thing is, too, don't apples usually come in clusters and we have to thin them at times?
I didn't think so.
Yeah, because I know with some of the apple growers I work with, they have to go through and thin the blossoms so that there's not clusters of apples forming. And what they do is by thinning, it allows the tree to put all its energy into just a couple apples, and then you get better apples.
Oh, I see. So that's the blossom. Okay, then maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, you might want to check out our publication, Growing Apples in Wisconsin. That's going to help you out a lot.
Yes, yes, I do have it, and
good.
I do refer to it frequently.
Good.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks very much. And I did bag them up so they don't have to use any herbicides or pesticides.
Oh, good.
Any pesticides. So I bagged them. Okay, well, thanks so much, you guys.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot for calling, Amy. Appreciate it. And Diane in Menominee. Hi to you.
Hi. I have a rose question.
Okay.
I just bought two roses, and I've planted them, and we have very, very sandy soil up here.
Good.
So I put some good potting dirt in first, or garden soil in first, mm-hmm. and then put the rose in. And one of them looked like it might have gone into a little shock because the new shoots were kind of wilted. Mm-hmm. The one next to it didn't look like that. But now the other one that was wilting has got the yellow leaves on the bottom. And they had finished blossoming, and the other one is starting to reblossom again, but this one is not. But my concern is the yellow leaves on the bottom of the rose bush.
Well, that happens with roses, and it could be for diseases or it could be nitrogen. But typically when you see the yellow leaves forming, mm-hmm. you're going to want to start pulling them off.
Okay.
That's a good way of
getting them out of there.
Yeah, and getting them out of there. Just don't drop them on the ground. Get them away from there, because
okay.
If they are infested with some sort of fungus that could spread up the plant. So yeah, the number one thing you can do for taking care of your roses, pull off those discolored leaves that form at the bottom. You're in sandy soil too.
Yes, very.
You're going to want to make sure those things stay well watered and well fertilized. I know at the gardens we had some roses on sandy soil, and I don't think we could keep them wet enough or fertilized enough to keep them happy.
Sure. I've been putting about a gallon of water on them each day. So.
Yeah, and you might want to experiment with some sort of fertilization regime just to make sure they get a lot of nutrients. Maybe get on the All-American Rose Selections website and get some good growing information from there to help you out with these.
Okay, and it's not shock then that I maybe was...
Oh, there's always the issue of shock when you're moving stuff around. But if you can come in and make sure things stay watered, that's going to help a lot. And any kind of discoloration, just pull it off of there.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim Nienhuis and Mike Maddox are guests today. I'm Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables and flowers and shrubs today on this edition of Garden Talk with our Viceroy of Vegetation, Mike Maddox, and Vicar of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Ann in Iron River, you are next. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. We are in the lake area in Iron River on the Pelk Lake chain. The deer and the rabbits are really getting to us, as everybody else. But my husband put a deer spray on our hosta. He used the same thing every year. However, this year, it is causing the wilting of the hosta. They're just awful. They're just wilting right to the ground. Do you suppose it is the deer spray? Could it have been old, or what would you suggest?
Well, yeah, that could be a possibility of it being old, and they're having some sort of reaction with the leaf that's causing problems. If you should store all kind of pesticides, including your deer sprays like that, as you would any medication over the winter. Don't leave it on the garage for it to freeze and degrade.
Okay.
But yeah, there could be that issue, so you may want to go do a new bottle. There can also be diseases out there that can cause your hostas to wilt, so you may want to get something into the garden center or to your county extension office to have it examined and to run through the different options of what those difficulties can be.
Best to try and get a leaf that's at least maybe part.
Actually, in this case, okay, I dig up the whole plant.
Dig the whole plant up.
Yeah, because if they're melting away, I'd want to see the roots.
Yeah, okay.
I'd want to see the roots.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Ann. Thank you. Brent in La Crosse. Hi to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Got a question about some hoop house tomatoes.
Okay.
Got them in a raised bed. Put them in March 1st. It was heated.
March 1st, cool.
Yeah. And about, let's see, March, April, May, end of April, beginning of May, as I'm trellising up the twine, you can see it, a distinct line from when you have really good green lush foliage to where they start to stretch and the leaves are getting paler and not quite as lush and full. Any ideas what that could be?
No, I don't have any idea what that could be. Although, you know, certainly going into longer days and changing that climate. I mean, I really admire the fact that you're trying to do these with hoop houses and you're transplanting. Heavens, in March, did you say?
Yeah, March 1st.
Wow, that is early. How did you provide the heat?
Pardon?
How did you provide the heat? Or was there no supplemental heating at all?
There was supplemental heat.
Oh, okay. And your objective is to try to get a... you know, tomatoes by the 4th of July?
Oh, no. We were getting tomato and cucumber salad the last week of April.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So you're... No, this is beyond a... this is just beyond a hoop house. You must be providing a lot of supplemental...
It's a market garden.
So. Ah,
okay.
No,
it's grown organic.
I'm trying to have a mental image of exactly what these plants are looking like, and maybe you have a better image of this than I do.
Well, yeah, mental image.
I don't know if it's
that is the magic of radio.
Problem. I do have a. It's grown organically, so I do have a small aphid whitefly problem that I'm keeping under control. Let's put it that way.
Well, my initial thought that came to mind was possible, you know, to have you test the nutrients they're growing in just to make sure there wasn't some sort of deficiency kicking in. Are you growing them in containers or are they in the ground?
No, it's in a raised bed, 4 foot wide by 40 feet long.
Yeah, I would always test the nutrients to make sure nothing's lacking in there. Look at other possibilities. I mean, it could be strange things as exhaust from the heater causing things to grow funny or...
Well, no, I mean, the heat was off by the time it started. There's no...
I'm just saying you may have to look at some of the out-of-the-ordinary things that could be a cause.
Okay. But a soil test wouldn't hurt.
You know, when in doubt, it doesn't hurt. It rules out some problems and gives you an idea of what your nutrients are. And again, it can just at least rule out the issue of nutrients.
Okay. Now, what varieties do you grow?
Kind of doing a trial with Cobra and Buffalo, which is dedicated greenhouse, and then... Early
so you're
Goliath.
Using varieties that are specifically adapted to greenhouse production.
But some of the ones that aren't like early Goliath, these seem to do quite well in the greenhouse.
That's a determinate variety, isn't it, the Goliath?
I've got all indeterminate.
Okay.
Hmm.
And Early Girl, First Lady, a couple other, I got about 7 different varieties. And they all do the same thing. They're all green, lush, up to about 4 feet. And then after that, they stretch and the leaves don't get quite as full.
That sounds environmental, if they're all doing it.
Yeah, it sure does. Yep.
Well, on my next trip up to La Crosse, I'm going to stop in and have a cucumber and tomato salad.
There you go.
And look at those stretched leaves. You know, okay. It could be, who knows?
Yeah, the distance between the two fruit, that, I don't know the term for them.
Yeah.
You see, before they were 5 to 6 inches in distance. Now they're stretching to, say, 8 to a foot.
But does that happen to you every year?
Yeah, I had the same problem last year, too.
Well, you are growing indeterminate varieties, and it could very well be that simply going into a much more productive day length, that the plants themselves might be responding in terms of enhanced indeterminate growth.
Sure.
Yeah. So
maybe they're doing the right thing out there.
Well, I mean, they're just not lush and green.
I mean,
anymore.
Are you eating? Are you having a great salad every day?
Oh yeah. Okay.
Now what's so really? You should have a haiku and say, my leaves have stretched. my cucumber tomato salad still endures. Why am I complaining?
Going down, too, so that's another thing, too. They're not quite, the flowers aren't setting quite as much as they used to, so.
Yeah, it sounds.
It's hard to.
Well, you know, you've had your plants in there, and you've been enjoying salad since March.
But he wants more production because it's commercial.
And he wants it to go completely through Christmas. Give the plants a break.
Okay, that's the best we can do, Brad. Thanks for calling. Mary in West Bend, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm the coordinator of our community garden program here in Washington County. Mm-hmm. And I've received a question from one of our gardeners. She's already, as a couple of us have, we have some tomato fruit set. And a passerby told her that she should be pinching off those tomatoes so that she gets bigger ones later on. And I would like to know what your take is on that.
Hmm. Well, I'm not great into changing plant architecture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people grow them in cages, and I see people out there with sharpened knives cutting away, you know, the
bonsai tomato.
Yeah, the bonsai tomato. You've been there? Mm-hmm. See, I'm a kind of plant it, let it grow, kind of a guy.
Yeah, but if you've been in a community garden and see the way some of these people have everything in just the perfect straight line on a grid system, some people just aren't that let it go type of people. No.
Well, and I think the concern was, this was a passerby. This wasn't a fellow gardener, but this was somebody who said, oh, you should be pinching those off to get better tomatoes. Whereas we're just so excited that we even have a garden, number one, and number two, we're getting fruit set.
How could you possibly pinch up
we
an early set tomato? I don't think I would be physically able to do that. I would say let it go.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to agree with Jim. Let it go and learn from the experience. And
exactly.
If it's not worth it, next year, pinch them off.
Okay, very good.
Thanks for calling. You know, what I might be tempted to do, I might be tempted to take one of the plants and pinch them off and not pinch off the other plants and see how that one plant
is. Is he setting up a control for an experiment? We're getting this from the radio guy.
Wow, he's setting up scientific experiments over the air. I would say, on the other hand, you know, why would you pinch off a tomato?
I don't know.
I can't imagine why you'd do such a thing.
Other than sometimes the first ones have the blossom end rot, but enjoy.
It's not going to happen.
Mary in Belleville, hi to you. Hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking this call.
Sure.
It's a great puzzlement to me. Last year we had a fierce infestation of squash bugs.
Ooh.
Followed by
squash borer or the squash bug?
Okay. Squash bugs, those brown, ugly things.
Yeah.
That lay golden eggs under the leaves.
Yeah.
Anyway, all of a sudden, before anything produced, everything wilted and died within like 48 hours, no matter where it was planted. And I understand that this was probably a virus carried by the squash bug.
I think the squash bug vectors a virus.
Yeah, and we had a straw around everything, so I suppose the squash bugs were happy down in the straw.
Plenty of places to hide.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nicely provided. Now, my question is, this year I'm not planting any. I said I would not plant a single cucurbit for that reason, and hope that the squash bugs that carried the virus don't go into the next generation. But I broke down and planted just a couple of things. What are my chances? Do they overwinter infected and then just go on? See, for 10 years we had no trouble at all, and all of a sudden one summer. What's the prognosis?
I think every year everything is different. That's my sense on it. I mean,
uh-huh.
I don't think I really don't know if these are going to overwinter or not. But I would say that any year you're going to have a flight or you're not going to have a flight of the squash bug, and whether it's hot or dry or wet.
Weather dependent. Yeah.
It's so weather dependent. I would say gamble. And let's face it. Can you go through life without ever planting squash again?
No.
Is there going to be any possibility? Are you going to let your life be dominated by squash bugs? It's not going to happen. We're going to grow them. And if we have to use, you know, some organic control to control the squash bug,
all right. Have you got
then
an
row,
idea?
Known us there. That's
how about a floating row cover?
Yeah, I was going to say something like that to keep it off.
Yeah, that works for the first few weeks, then they blossom. And
a floating row cover on squash would have to be, you know, 500 feet, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then you got to get it off there for... Yeah.
I think you just hope for a good year.
Hope for a good year, and for situations like this, I know there's information out there on tackling some of those pests. We have our Fresh Market vegetable specialist. She has a webpage via the horticulture site, UW-Madison, that you can link to. And she has a list of publications you can have. And I was just on there yesterday, whether or not your problem is actually one of them. She also has links to other places that I'm sure you can find it.
So what's the website?
It's one of those horrible website names.
So just University of Wisconsin Horticulture Department.
Yeah, go there, and then through their navigation system, you can find the Fresh Market Vegetable.
What's your favorite squash, by the way?
I am
Are you a summer squash or a winter squash lady?
Buttercup,
You're
yeah.
a buttercup lady?
I like buttercup.
I'm really into butternuts.
Well, that's the one thing I did risk and put in this year, figuring the butternut will do anything, you know? Whereas buttercup kind of looks and gives up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're actually different. Those two are actually different species. And butternut tends to be much more, tends to have greater resistance, not only to squash vine borer, but also to think to the squash bug itself. So butternut is a very well adapted vegetable to Wisconsin.
Yeah, we'll see how it does.
I'm trying to make a new one that has a golden. Would you consider this a butternut squash that has a golden yellow rind?
Oh,
and what do you think about that? I mean, I love the squash. The only thing I don't like about it is that it has that sort of buff brown rind. So I've decided to make it bright yellow.
Well, we'll ponder that and think about that here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer here with my Vicar of Vegetables, Jim Nieuwenhuis, professor of the Department of Horticulture at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and a gardening haiku poet, and our Viceroy of Vegetation, Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, located in the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, here to answer your questions. And we're going to get to Nathan in just a minute. But before we go to the phones again, there are some events that are coming up at a couple that you guys wanted to mention.
Oh, yeah. We're certainly going to have the Mesoamerican Garden this year, and that's going to be held on the same day as the West Madison, how is that called, the Agriculture Research Station out there on... What is road is that? Is that Verona Road? Or, no, that's not Verona Road.
Mineral Point.
Mineral Point. I knew it was one of those roads. Not Verona Road, Mineral Point Road. And that is going to be Saturday, August 18th. And I will be out there personally. I think Mike is... No, you have a conflict that day.
Yeah, I've got my own event that day. We're having our second annual Heirloom Vegetable Festival, in which we'll be doing free taste testing of 50 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes, 50 different varieties of heirloom peppers, 50 different varieties of heirloom eggplant, and, get this, 50 different varieties of basil. That's a lot of pesto. And that'll be in the afternoon from 1 to 4. So technically, I think you can go to West Madison in the morning.
Yeah, I think we're 10 to 3.
Yeah, you can go to West Madison in the morning and then come down to Janesville in the afternoon.
And you're going to have your salsa.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have our salsa. We're going to do our pepper roasting out there. Erwin and I will be there. My other Vicar will be there. And then in the afternoon, you can go down and see the Viceroy. But I think it's important to know that I'll roast my peppers for you, and you can try my salsa at the Mesoamerican Festival. And also, don't forget, you have to begin to put this down on your calendars. We will be having our third annual Giant Pumpkin Regatta.
On Lake Mendota.
On Lake Mendota, and we're growing growing some of our own giant pumpkins this year right out in Fitchburg, and... You know, of course, what we do is we mount those on these giant tractor tires, and we race them on Lake Mendota, and it's been a fun event. This year, the only conflict we have is with the Michigan State football game, which we're thinking that we can actually have our giant pumpkin regatta right after the big game.
What day is it?
That would be September 29th.
September 29th.
What do you think? Anybody want to race a pumpkin against Mike Maddox? Will be there.
I'll put it on my calendar.
Yeah, put that on your calendar, Mike.
Nathan in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Nathan.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Got some questions on growing broccoli and cauliflower.
Okay.
Cool. This is how I spent my entire youth.
Got a new garden. I bought a new house last year, established a garden this year. The heads of broccoli that I'm getting are only about 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and likewise for the cauliflower. I mean, the plants are nice, big, full, lots of foliage,
but no, you know, no vegetable, so to speak.
Patience, patience, Nathan.
Okay.
No, I would have to guess that your broccoli is certainly going to develop, and it's going to develop very quickly. You
okay.
Know, really, I've had. Do you do your cauliflower in the fall?
Are you
a spring guy or a fall?
I planted it in the spring. Was first able to get it established this spring, the garden.
Sure.
And thought, well, let's try a bunch of stuff, see how it works. Yeah. Soil is pretty good. Had a minimal organic content. I amended the soil to, add to that.
This is how I spent my entire, I spent my entire youth. This was my big thing. Not my big thing. It was my father's big thing. Because we were market gardeners just outside of Chicago. And he was a Dutchman, right? So it was bloemkool, right? Growing at bloemkool, Jimmy, right? And he would actually put the broccoli in for the spring, and I followed his same tradition. We were kind of spring broccoli and fall cauliflower folks. And, of course, my job was to grow out there. I was, my father was actually a leader in organic agriculture. No, that's not true. Actually, my father was cheap. rather than buying fertilizer or insecticides, we would make our own fertilizer from the cows and horses, and you'll never guess what the insecticide was. Jimmy, get out there and squash those bugs. My fingers were like so totally green by the end of the season. This is how we controlled. I was like the dipel. I was like the biggest dipel, right, out there. I was squashing bugs. This is how I. And then in the fall, of course, the other thing we would do is at that time the cauliflowers were not the self-heading types. The self-blanching types. They did not have the erect leaves. They tended to have more of an open canopy. So my job was always to tie up cauliflower with baling twine. But I would say be a little patient. Your broccoli is going to come on. And I would say, try some cauliflower for the fall.
What's a good time to put it in the fall?
I would start them in, I would start the seedlings first week in July.
Okay.
And then transplant. What about Romanesco? Wouldn't that be a riot? Put some Romanesco. You've got good soils. I can sense in your voice a love of gardening. I would say, I'm going to go big into Romanesco this fall. If you can't grow it, you stop by and I'll give you some of mine. I'm just really into it.
Because the broccoli...
Have you ever seen a vegetable that's more...
It has already started to bolt, and I actually had some go to flower.
Sure.
So
broccoli is clearly going to do, because they are functional flower buds on broccoli.
Right.
And they will rapidly move into flowering. They don't require vernalization at all in order to flower. So if they're 2 inches, just enjoy.
Okay.
I mean, if I would say certainly you're going to want to harvest before they go into full flower. But what about, I'm fixated on the fall. Have you ever seen as beautiful a vegetable as, if you were Claude Monet, wouldn't you grow Romanesco just everywhere? It's just the most artistic vegetable out there, isn't it? Oh, God, I love it.
Thanks, Nathan.
Very much.
Okay. Yeah, thanks,
Sorry
Nathan.
For that long-winded answer.
I don't think so.
I think you said get started on transplants.
Patience. I heard that in there somewhere.
The tradition is that I actually never answered the question.
I'm starting to catch on to that, but it's making me laugh in the process.
A lot of people think I should be in politics, right, because of that.
Let's go to Sandy in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, good afternoon. I would like to know, are squash heavy feeders, and what would be the best fertilizer to use? I've grown squash in about the same spot for about the last 15 years.
Wow, squash, talk about heavy feeders, right? Squash, I was out in my garden yesterday, and I was actually, squash is the only plant, I would say the only plant that you can watch grow.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I'm fascinated just at the rate of, mitosis that's occurring, right, in those buds, as well as, but you can only imagine that in order to maintain that rate of cell division and cell growth, that those plants must be sucking up nutrients like nobody's business.
Yeah.
Is that a scientific response?
That
sounds
nobody
good to me.
Sucking it up like nobody's business. Does that sound professorial? But I think, I would say heavy feeders. And I would say that boy, what do I apply? Mm-hmm. I actually do apply nitrogen.
Okay, could I use a 10-10-10 or manure?
Manure, composted manure would be great.
Okay.
Right? A little 10-10-10, a little water-soluble fertilizer. I'm really into that.
Yeah, okay. And that'll be immediately available for it, too, if you use that water-soluble. You put it in the manure, it's going to have to work just a little bit harder to get to that.
What about if you just made, like, a manure tea?
Is this for you and your husband, or for the?
I'm glad you said it because that's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, did you have that same mental image?
Oh yeah, that just was like, I'm not coming to eat at your
place.
You
know, it's like you know, you say if she'd said chamomile, I could have gone right there. But when she said
Earl Grey, but
you know, Earl Grey, you know, she said the manure tea
doesn't do a thing for
you.
I
would go. I would go with 10-10-10, and then I would compost that manure, and that's where I would plant my squash next year.
Okay.
What are you growing? You're growing butternuts.
Butternut.
Now,
and,
listen, tell me,
dumpling.
Come on, am I the only weirdo out here? I can't tell you the looks I got from my colleagues. Probably, there it is. Jim Packard was looking askance at me as well. When the only thing that bothers me about the butternut is the rind, which, of course, I don't even eat. Right?
No,
why am I so concerned about this?
I have no idea.
You should be concerned what's on the inside, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Okay,
thanks, Andy.
Yeah. Aaron in New Richmond. Hi.
Hi. First,
I just planted in New Richmond.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. We just planted a trial in New Richmond.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, we're everywhere in the state.
First, I have a really bad haiku while I was waiting.
Oh, cool. Oh, cool. Is this a spontaneous vegetable haiku? Or
yes,
a New Richmond haiku?
This is a spontaneous vegetable haiku.
Okay, cool. Let me get it down.
Thumper is not cute.
Summer?
Thumper.
Thumper. Oh, yeah. Oh, Mr. McGregor. Oh, you're with me on this one, aren't you?
When all his friends party in my garden.
Now, is the last line there? Could I add the last line? Was it Mr. McGregor was right?
Yeah, I like that better.
Okay, yeah.
Well, now, what's your question?
Well,
I won't answer it anyway, so why bother?
I have a gooseberry bush that grows grapes.
Thumper didn't eat those, right?
No, well, he didn't eat it this year. I thought he maybe have eaten it last year, but I put rabbit fencing up.
Okay.
And the gooseberry bush is still getting stripped of leaves, and I haven't seen any bugs on it. I've gone out at all times of the day and night. I've tried insecticidal soap, but I have no idea what else to try. The first year it produced lots of gooseberries.
Golly, we can give a myriad of good answers to this one. Let me turn it over to Mike.
Well, I would say we can come up with all sorts of answers, but what we need to do is just really find the source of the problem to give you an answer that works. If you do have the rabbit fencing out, come on, they're rabbits. They're stealth specialists. They're going to get in there and eat them if they want it.
Well, it has worked in keeping them out of my other garden, so they're not eating any of our other.
Maybe there's such demand in rabbit land.
Would there be? Do you have it all mulched?
No, I don't.
Okay, so there's no place for bugs to hide that come out at night.
Yeah, it's probably going to take a little bit more investigation. You know, we can, like I said, give you any answer. You know, we can always make up an answer and give it to you. As we've demonstrated.
Where to go?
Yeah.
I know, you know, but you sense a sadness here.
Yeah.
You sense a sadness. You sense a loss here. Why are my gooseberries not there for me? Why is some other creature consuming these? And I'm sorry, we cannot provide a good answer to that.
You might.
I would suggest looking at the other things that are working and, you know, count your blessings there and accept the gooseberry loss.
Yeah, or you can try, instead of just screening, you know, maybe try one of those products that will actually protect the leaves, so anything that does bite into it will receive a nice little foul taste in its mouth if it does happen to be a little Roger Rabbit, or if it's an insect.
Probably a bug at this point.
Yeah, it's probably a bug at this point, but I don't like to recommend insecticides until we know what pest it is.
Right, so how do I find out, where do I go for information?
Well, first of all, vigilance on your part. Keep an eye on it. And I believe, again, with UW Extension, we have a publication where gooseberries is lumped into one of our Growing in Wisconsin series. I think it's with Currents and that. And that's on the web.
And you probably need to spend a little more time out after dark. If you haven't spent much time out after dark out there, I would be out there after dark with a
with a flashlight and
a
then
picnic, a little quiet, a little Chardonnay, I think, yeah, would be appropriate.
I was to say warn your neighbor so they don't think somebody's stalking in your backyard.
Mm. Yeah, warn the neighbors. The thanks, Aaron. Good luck. Jack in Elm Grove, hi to you.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick comment on your previous caller's problem. Liquid Fence, which they sell at a number of garden
Isn't
stores.
Isn't that the magic of radio? The
I'm
listeners
sorry?
Have the answers. God bless you. Thank you.
Liquid
Thank you.
Fence.
That has really worked for me with any kind of pest, rodents, chippies and rabbits, et cetera, as well as deer.
What about tree rats?
Squirrels? Squirrels?
Squirrels, yeah, it seems to work on everything. They don't like it. It is an organic product, and they just don't like the smell, and they don't like to get it on their feet. So you don't have to spray your particular target, per se, but just spray around it. And if they get it on their feet, they seem to stay away. So that's my recommendation.
Cool.
Okay, what about the question you have?
The question I have pertains to a profusion crab tree that is not profuse. In fact, it's the complete opposite. It does not flower at all in the spring. I just don't know. It was planted about 7 years ago in very fertile soil, and everything else around it is doing wonderfully. But this particular crab is it's very healthy. The tree is. It just doesn't flower.
And it and what, does it hang on to its leaves all summer?
It does, absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
So it's not
a prolific, a profuse, but not prolific, right? That crab tree.
Oh,
what's is it in full sun?
No, it's a western. It's probably planted 10 feet west of my house.
And how many hours of sunlight does it get?
Oh, it probably gets, especially in the spring when it's probably, you know, needing the sunlight. It gets more. It gets at least, 8 hours of sun.
Well, that should be considered full sun if it really is getting the 8 hours that it needs.
Maybe it's 6 hours.
Yeah. Okay. The issues that could be you know, a light issue. You know, they need the light to trigger to get them to flower. Mm-hmm. You said fertile soil. To me, that's a red flag for too much nutrients. Too much nitrogen. You know, that things typically don't flower the best when you have too high nitrogen levels. It could be a personal issue between you and the tree. I've had a red bud in my yard. I've threatened every year to flower. Otherwise, you're getting.
Have you used threats in terms of instead of fertilizer?
Threats. Yes, I've used threats.
What about the evil stare? Have you tried that?
It's done that. I've shaken the pruning saw at it before, and this year it came through.
Nothing like cranking up the chainsaw.
Violence in the garden.
Almighty.
Yeah.
You want it to flower?
Ooh, yeah, Lord. Patience. Yeah, that's a virtue with gardening. So keep it around for a little bit longer.
The tree looks healthy, and it's fairly close to an ammo anchor, which is doing absolutely wonderfully.
Okay.
And it puts on a great show in the spring and the fall with the colors. This profusion crab just, not.
I've heard Terrell Roper suggest from time to time that you take a knife.
Ooh. Ooh,
and
there, we're getting to that violence thing.
Whoa,
you go partway around the tree with that knife, cutting through the bark layer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was just stalking around.
Because
the
what
tree,
you're doing is what you're what, and I wouldn't do this without checking and going to his website. But it is a way of shocking the tree.
Yes.
I
and
think the website is going to be shocking
along. He's done it on other fruit trees, and has had it and has gotten it to actually shock the tree into flowering.
Do you have a mental image of Terrell out there with a with a Bowie knife stalking around? I don't know,
hacking on trees.
Yeah, honest to God.
And do you know the website address for?
If you go to the UW Department of Horticulture,
it's right next to that Fresh Market vegetable one I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, it'll be fruit trees. And go there.
Just Google plant threats.
Actually, he's done that, and it's worked.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll give that. Perhaps we'll give that a shot. I mean, maybe I just give it another.
You can try with your trees, but don't go near your vegetables like that.
But there's no other. I mean, when I say fertile soil, I would assume it's fertile because I have not had any problems with anything else grown.
Well, the fact that you're getting green leaves and robust growth signifies that it's fertile and maybe even too fertile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to stress the tree a little bit?
I'm sorry?
So you want to, what the knife does is it stresses the tree.
Sure. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And John and Madison, your turn. Hi, John.
Hello. I have a problem with some petunias. They're dying like they have like verticillar wilt, but other plants in the same thing are doing fine. It's just the petunias are dying.
I think it's verticillium wilt.
Is it?
Since you answered, this is a rhetorical question on the radio.
Is there a wilt that is just specific for...
Verticillium wilt does have a large range of hosts that it can hop into from the ornamentals over to the vegetable garden. But there's some things that do have resistance for it. Off the top of my head, I don't know what those are. But if you are having an issue specific to your petunia in the pot and not anything else, it may be the petunia itself. I've just seen some petunias that just are pretty puny.
You know, it's hosts and parasites. Whenever the host is, you know, if it's flowering, if it's growing, it's all about the climate. It could be simply that the triangle of disease happens to favor that pathogen in that particular host, given that particular environment.
And that cultivar of petunia. It could be. There's a lot of different options here. You know, if you really want to get down to the problem, dig it up, roots and all, send it into the disease lab. They'll do a diagnostic test on it for, you know, just the cost of the test and give you an answer back. And that way we can help determine what your course of action should be.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, and sometimes even, you know, depending on where you buy the plants, makes a large difference. Because sometimes some of the larger companies get their
you know, it could just be a fluke in a, you know, I go to the little mom and pop places that are locally owned, and I got some good stuff this year, and the impatience I got just aren't doing too hot, and I just
everything else is fine,
and it's like that's just a part of being a gardener. You know, some things make it, other things don't.
No kidding, that's exactly what happens, right?
I just don't get upset. They're just plants.
Yeah, the things that don't go aren't doing well this year. There are other vegetables that are doing well. I would encourage you, of course, you'd eliminate all those trees and shrubs.
And I'll say put a big tree in your vegetable garden then. But
okay. Thanks, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jim and Mike, thank you.
What's that time?
We're done already?
The time is flowing here. Thank you so much. Jim Nianos, UW-Madison professor in the Department of Horticulture, gardening haiku expert, vicar of vegetables, one of our guests. The other, Mike Maddox, viceroy of vegetation, Rock County UW Extension horticulture educated. He works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. How are the gardens looking now, by the way? Just
looking very good. If you need to get down there for this weekend, go. It's a good time to start visiting.
And the problems that you had with the criminal problem.
Behave yourself. You are now on camera, so just smile.
Okay.
So you can't sneak in and dig up any plants.
Not anymore. You'll get busted.
You'll get busted. All right. Well, I tell you what, we've got lots of things coming up for you. On Monday at 11, I'll be talking with Margaret Bogue again. It's great to have her back. We'll be talking about her book, Around Lake Superior. It's been revised and expanded into a second edition. So kind of looking forward to having a chance to visit with Margaret again. And then Joe Rhodes of Madison will join us actually for the first time. He's a Mac computer consultant, and he will have some advice for us on Macintosh computers and accessories. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.